You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and radioreverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on radioreverb.com.
Hi, welcome to the HIV Hour. Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing? Stephen, how are you doing?
I'm doing not bad, trying to work out the weather, as always in London. You know, you think, is it hot today? Is it cold today? And just keeping busy. So I'm doing good. What about you, Tony? How's things with you?
I'm all right, yes. It's nice and sunny down here in West Sussex. So we're all right down here. A bit nervous. Got a ab sale on Saturday, raising a bit of money. But yeah, so What about you guys, Sue and Tanya?
Yeah, what's going on? Tanya's on the show.
Tanya's in the house today.
Yes.
Where have you been all these weeks, Tanya? Where have you been?
But I've got the good news.
Oh, she's pregnant. I'm joking.
My results are back, and I passed. I've got a distinction.
Well done.
That's great.
Tell our listeners, Tanya, what you got a merit in.
I've got a merit in the designing that I do on my fabric, because I'm dealing with nature. So I went into the forest and I took some pictures of a tree and I printed them and made them into a dress. So that's where I got a distinction.
Oh, wow. So something quite special then.
Great.
Yeah, it is really great. It's something that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
So
brilliant.
I'm really, really happy about that.
Good. Yes, I've been quite busy as well. I've had a few days off with moving house and so forth. So I'm still sort of surrounded by boxes, but I keep losing my Billy, which is my cat. And I thought, I looked under the bed just a few minutes ago. He's in one of my plastic boxes and made himself right at home and not wanting to. But apart from that, everything's getting busy. We've got lots of things on the show this week. What are we going to be talking about this week, Stephen? Give our listeners a bit of an intro on what we've got this week.
Well, this week we're going to be doing our world news, which always focuses on what's happening around the world. And then we're going to have a short segment that Josh recorded with Bill Pullman. And where's Bill from? Is it the Sussex Beacon?
It's the Sussex Beacon, yes. And if anyone doesn't know, we've got a couple of anniversaries happening.
Oh, yeah.
The Sussex Beacon, 30 years. Can you believe it? It just feels like a couple of years for the Sussex Beacon, doesn't it, Tony? Yeah. But it's 30 years. And also
crazy.
40 years for the Terence Higgins Trust. So we've got a couple of big celebrations, lots of things going on this year. Josh managed to get a wee interview with lovely Bill from the Sussex Beacon talking about the anniversary. And I was recently, it seems like a long time ago, I was recently in April, I attended the Beaver Conference in Manchester, which was wonderful. And I've got a fantastic recording from the mayor of Manchester, which is really great. But he came on the last day and done a really great speech, really influential and empowering. So we've got that. And we've got, what else we got, Tony? You've got something really interesting to talk about.
I've got a couple of community news, and also I've got a news article that said African countries are really worried that COVID has hijacked people being diagnosed from HIV in certain African countries, and obviously this will have a detrimental effect on their treatment and their diagnosis. So yeah, that's a really really interesting article, actually.
I think things are starting now. Things are settling down. I'm not saying they're going away with COVID, but then because of things are settling down, things are starting to erupt in certain things, people's health, you know, the backlash of COVID. So no doubt we'll be hearing lots and seeing lots of things going on, and what you're going to be talking about is going to be really interesting. So let's get on with the show.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
And I hope you're enjoying the Manchester weather, which is very typical, which is always like this. And of course, maybe some of the nightlife. We are the 24-hour party people, or as the Prime Minister might call it, 24-hour work gathering people in Manchester. So we hope you're enjoying everything that the place has got to offer. But I would say this is the right place to have this event. So many of you from so many different backgrounds working to support people living with HIV, to prevent new infections from all over the country. I think we can say we have been something of a spiritual home on this whole question. If you go back, we have shown leadership on HIV. If you go all the way back to the launch of the Manchester AIDS line in 1985, I just was hearing Claire as I walked in talking about remembering, obviously, those we've lost. And every year, the culmination of Manchester Pride always concludes with the vigil, and it's such a moving event. But it's there in our calendar. It's part of who we are, it's part of what we do. We remember those who fought for justice for people with HIV, who've kind of raised awareness over the years, and that's very much at the heart of our city and what we do. And looking forward to the future, I think you've just been hearing about our commitment to be a fast-track city, and we live that, we breathe it, it means a huge amount to us, and we're looking for your support actually to make sure that we can end new infections by 2030. Such a challenging target, but the right kind of challenge to make. And if you can help us, then perhaps we can also be somewhere that you can point to as an area that is bringing forward some of the new thinking that will help us get to where we need to be. You know, this is a great city. It did all of those things in the past because it is a place where we believe people are inherently equal, where we want people to be free always, to be who they want to be, to love who they want to love, and to live life without discrimination or stigma. That absolutely is in the Greater Manchester DNA, and it's why we are proud of our status as a fast track city. Sure, you may have heard already that we have met the 95 target in terms of people with HIV being diagnosed, in terms of those having been diagnosed on treatment, and 95% of those on treatment with a viral load that is low, even undetectable, so as to prevent transmission. So that is real progress. We signed up to be a fast-track city in 2018, and we have made progress since. But we always have to kind of challenge ourselves to go further. I just mentioned before the goal of ending new transmissions by by 2030 is now very much in our sights. Can we get there? I'm hoping you're going to say we can. but we are obviously going to need your help. We are doing groundbreaking work. Let me just mention a couple of examples. Already, Manchester Foundation Trust. So that's our big trust. In fact, I think the biggest hospital trust in the country, or one of the very biggest. You'll have, alongside Claire, other clinicians working in MFT with us at the conference today. I'm really proud that they are now doing routine opt-out testing for HIV and hepatitis C in their emergency departments, and they run a number of emergency departments across the trust. And we are now working through our devolved Greater Manchester Health and Social Care Partnership to work with our second biggest trust, if you like, the Northern Care Alliance, the hospital trust that runs Royal Salford, but a number of other sites as well, to do the same. And we feel this is the next step, if you like, to really getting kind of into the into the meat of tackling where we've got to go next. Manchester and Salford are the places that have the highest number of people living with HIV, and that's why we are pushing really hard on that particular front. You know, we look to what we can do here, but I recently was asked by the network of fast track cities across Europe, the mayors of the fast track cities, to also express solidarity with people from Ukraine, therefore fast track cities, but also to do whatever we can to support people displaced by the conflict, to ensure that their treatment does not suffer. And I was proud to sign that declaration, and I hope that declaration will give some reassurance, some confidence, some pride, I hope, to the community more broadly. And I'll finish on one last point, because it is a really important point. Kevin and I were just talking about it on the way over. I think as part of our status, I think we need to challenge ourselves again about HIV education. Because I think there is a risk, kind of living through the pandemic that we've lived through, thinking about the challenges of now, the mental health pandemic that obviously we're all dealing with, some of the issues that the health service has now in front of it in terms of the backlog. There is a risk amongst the younger generation that they may kind of hear the letters HIV, AIDS, and think that belongs to the 1980s or the 1990s, that the challenge is somehow in the past. And I think we have to educate people to make sure that they understand that that is not the case, but actually that people don't need to live in fear, and nobody ever should live with that stigma, because obviously the changes that we've made, there is so much now that can be done to provide support. I can remember, if I'm honest, my own kind of personal shock when it was in, I think, the middle 2000s, when I discovered, like everybody did, that Chris Smith, the first openly gay member of parliament in this country, had been living for a number of years with HIV. Now, I say I mentioned my shock, it's because I was Chris's special advisor for a number of years. I worked with him as shadow health secretary in opposition, then became his political special advisor at the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. I remember when Chris made that public, I had to challenge my own assumptions, if you like, my own even prejudices about what it meant, if you like, to have HIV, you know, what that was all about. And it was such a moment of kind of change, really, for me, in terms of understanding where things were now. And Chris, as ever, having the confidence to come out and say that, I think he changed attitudes around what it is to live with HIV. And that was a moment of change. But it's why in this job, as I've come in to hold the privilege of leading this city region as I do, with its proud history that I mentioned at the start, it seems to me absolutely imperative that we are a fast track city, that we do send out that strong message to the rest of this country and to the world, that nobody here with HIV will ever, should ever live with any stigma at all, that we will always endeavour to provide them with the best support and treatment that we possibly can, that we educate people here about what we can all do to prevent future transmissions. And actually, by 2030, I look forward to this conference coming back to this city and saying to you all that we've met that goal of ending new transmissions of HIV in this city region. Imagine what a feeling that would be. Let's work towards that, everybody. Support us along the way if you can, but just know there is a rock-solid political commitment to that from the top of this city down and shared by all of the political leaders here. So have a great time in Manchester. I know you've got another day of conference tomorrow, Laura, so don't go out and have too many work gatherings across the city region this evening. Take it easy. Enjoy the rest of the conference, though. We're proud to have you here. And the reason I'm here is I just wanted to say that personally to you all and to thank you for the amazing work that you all do. Thank you very much.
Come aboard, sister.
Radio Reverb.
So, yes, a really great interview. I've never been to a Beaver conference before, and I just want to highlight some of the things. Some of the things I picked up. It was very medical. It was very, very scientific. Lots of information on research that has been done. And obviously, one of the highlights of the conference was talking about the injectables. And I had a really in-depthful insight to what's going to happen with injectables. And I don't know about you guys, but I just had the impression, and perhaps I wasn't really taking too much notice, that, we'll eventually all get an opportunity to go on the injectables if we want to, and it'll just be, we'll just go pop along for an injection, and that will be it. And I found so much more information about that, Tony. And apparently, I don't know whether you know, but apparently there will be a selection process that will happen in each city and each town. And then anyone will be invited to go on the selection process. And throughout that selection process, people will be chosen, in fact. It may be that people that are not adhering to their medication, or they've got problems adhering to the contact pills. In other words, basically, not anyone in the first process of injectables will be going on injectables. So there's only going to be a criteria of people which are going to be chosen. Now, it doesn't just stop there. It doesn't just stop there. Now, apparently, they had a demonstration on how the injections will be administered. Ooh, it's going to be two injections, one in each buttocks. And it makes you jump off your seat, doesn't it, Tony? But apparently, it's not a case of just, it's not a case of just sticking that injection in. They've got to maneuver that injection into a certain part of the fleshy bit of wherever that is. I know, I'm really jumping at the moment.
No, thank you. No, ma'am, Pam. No, thank you.
but the thing is, and also the solutions have got to be kept in the fridge. And apparently that particular medication that you will take, you'd have to take in tablet form for a couple of weeks. And then you would go on to the injectable. So it was really quite informative, and perhaps I'm sounding a bit negative. I'm not. It was a bit more in-depth information, and I'm sure that in time, obviously this is an amazing thing that's going to be happening. So, but no, really interesting, really interesting.
Can I just ask, Sue, how often is the injections going to be administered? Is it going to be once a year, once a month? How often is it?
Yeah, the ones that we're talking about is every 2 months.
Right.
So every 2 months you would have to go back to your whoever's going to be administering the injectables. Okay. Now they're talking about, are pharmacists going to be doing them? Are the nurses at the clinic going to be doing them? Are the consultants going to be there? That's still in sort of talks at the moment. So no doubt we will get to know more as the time goes on.
Do they say anything about side effects? Sorry, because I'm dead interested in this, but
They haven't spoken about the side effects at the moment. This is why you wouldn't automatically start going onto the injectables. The medication that will be going into the injection will be in tablet form to start. So you would take that tablet form, start, then they'd monitor that. It'd be quite a few appointments, and you'd be backwards, in other words. Okay, so no, interesting, and there's some really interesting stuff I've picked up. But no, really great stuff for the future. You know, I managed to see one of the new HIV tests with the swab on the tongue, you know, with saliva. That just looked amazing, you know, honestly. You know, it's just a dab on the tongue, but I've seen the actual. So we really are coming a long way since what we thought about 5, 10, 15 years ago, all the advancements of scientific stuff going on, which is exciting, very exciting. So watch this space for all the other things to come. So.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. We are back here on Radio Reverb, and we are also available on podcast. So our next story is going to be
by Stephen.
It's going to be by me. Okay, so I'm going to do my piece of world news, and it's about how family issues influence adolescence to disengage from HIV care. Now, this is a study that's been done in Kenya, and adolescents living with HIV in Kenya, particularly those orphaned by the loss of one or both parents, experiences challenges when new caregivers or unstable living situations undermine HIV care engagement. According to a study that's been recently published by the Journal of International AIDS Society, these changes were compounded by poverty, stigma at the household level, the lack of a caregiving capacity, and the skills to support adolescents with HIV. Of the 1.7 million adolescents aged between 10 to 19 living with HIV globally, 89% live in sub-Saharan Africa. And despite the scale-up of antiretroviral therapy, adolescents still have poorer treatment outcomes, including lower viral suppression rates, poor adherence to medication, higher rates of disengagement from care, and mortality compared to other age groups in Kenya. AIDS is the leading cause of illness and death among adolescents in Kenya. And the study that was done by Courtney Meyer of the Indiana University follows a previous report that that found that trauma is a major underlying reason for adolescents disengaging from HIV care in Kenya. And because these adolescents experience significant transitions related to caregivers, peer and social relationships, which impact their well-being and the current research has investigated how family level environments affect disengagement or support re-engagement for HIV care. Now, the study traced 10 to 19 year olds who have been enrolled at the hospital in, let me get this right, Kitale District Hospital in Western Kenya, and they admit, and those that had missed their appointments for the last 60 days or more. And some of the reasons for, you know, these young people missing their appointments or stopping their treatment is one female said, I went to those family members that I'd never gone to before. It's in a far town, it's in a rural area, so I found it hard because they never knew my status. And another person says, when I'm with my friends on the street, I did not want them to know I was taking antiretroviral, so I stayed for 4 months without taking the drugs. Another one said, I was staying here and I was coming on foot. It was far, and my dad had retired last year. We went to a rural town, so there's been no transportation. So it shows how many issues these young people are facing, not only with the loss of a parent or a, you know, but also with getting their treatment, with traveling, with all these other things. So yeah, it's just shining a light on how, you know, they are trying to encourage young people to yeah. continue with the treatment, because obviously the mortality rate is so high in Kenya that it is important that young people are aware of how important continuing their treatment is.
It's also that about disclosure, isn't it? About you know, being diagnosed with it, and also, like they said in that piece, it was like you know, telling their friends that they're on treatment and stuff. It's also mm-hmm. that's being scared of disclosure, which is almost comes down to stigma, doesn't it? It does come, you know, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it must be incredibly challenging for them as a young person. Mm. Very.
Which, when you talk about the injection, so you think, gosh, how great would that be? You know, obviously, it's in very early stages, but how great would that be for young people who could just go and have their injection once a month and not have to worry about pills or all that traveling and things like that? So
I think there was I think me and Sue did a piece a couple of years ago, and it was about African countries that are developing a vaginal ring. It's not something that I'm definitely into, but it's a vaginal ring that actually had the medication in. So they didn't have to take medication. It was released regularly every day. And so that helped out a lot. And I think that was developed for the sub-Saharan African countries, which is amazing. But yeah. That's a good piece, that is, Stephen. Very good. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting.
What's your piece, Tony?
So I was, again, African countries. African countries are worried that COVID has hijacked people being diagnosed from HIV. So it was on the British Medical Journal and AIDS Map. And it's just saying basically about the how is it going to affect the treatment, longevity of treatment, and you know, things like that. So I will do that right now.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
And on this bit of world news, I'm discussing the impact of how COVID-19 lockdown has affected the HIV care in 65 South African primary care clinics and the background about it. The article has been taken out of the Lancet HIV, so here we go. The effect of HIV pandemic on HIV outcomes in low-income and middle-income countries is poorly described. We aim to measure the impact of 2020 national COVID-19 lockdown on HIV testing and treatment in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, where 1.7 million people are living with HIV. In these clinics, they analysed and anomalised programmatic data from 65 of these primary care clinics in KwaZulu-Natal province in South Africa. This affected the theories such as testing for HIV, initiating the ARV, the antiretroviral therapy, collecting the ART, the antiretroviral therapy, and participating clinics during the study period with no age restrictions. They used descriptive statistics to summarise demographic and clinical data and present crude summaries of the main outcomes of the numbers of HIV tests per month, ART initiations per week, and the ART collections visits per week before and after the national lockdown began on March 27th, 2020. They used the Poisson segmented regression models and estimate the immediate impact of the lockdown on those outcomes, as well as the post-lockdown trends. Between the 1st of January 2018 and the 31st of July 2020, they recorded 1,315,439 HIV tests. But between the 1st of January 2018 and June the 15th 2020, they recorded 71,142 ART antiretroviral treatment initiations and 2,319,992 antiretroviral collection visits. They also recorded 41,926 HIV tests per month before lockdown, January 18 to March 2020, and 38,911 tests after lockdown, April 2020 to July 2020. So with that taken in mind, there is an estimated decrease of 47.6% in HIV testing in April 2020. Antiretroviral initiations decreased per week before lockdown to 375 per week after lockdown to 331 to 399, with an estimated 46.2% decrease in the regression model for the first week of lockdown, March 30th, 2020 to April the 5th, 2020. Now, the ART collections, the antiretroviral collection visits per week before lockdown were 17,863 visits per week. After lockdown, the estimated effect for this first week of lockdown says it's down by 95%. As restrictions eased, HIV testing and ART initiations gradually improved towards pre-lockdown levels for HIV testing, and for the ART initiations, everything bounced back up to 95% of what they were before. What this means is the antiretroviral provisioning was generally maintained during the 2020 COVID-19 lockdown, but the HIV testing and ART initiations were heavily impacted. Strategies to increase testing and treatment initiation should be implemented. As we know, in being in the UK, as soon as we get to a certain level of our CD4 count, or if we go through a chronic stage at the initiation, like, you know, after seroconversion, now they tend to put people directly on ART therapy. It negates some of the side effects and some of the long-term damage it can cause. I am just thankful for the Lancet HIV to give us, or to allow people just to look at these articles, allow us to put them on the, read them out and digest them. And it's really good to see what other countries are doing to help HIV positive people overseas in countries that have different infrastructures than ours. Anyway, thanks for listening. I take care.
Hi, if you've just tuned in to HIVR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online, and we're also on podcast. And now we're going to listen to the interview with Josh and Bill from the Sussex Beacon.
So, welcome back to the HIV Hour. I've got the pleasure to be with Bill Puddicombe, who's the Executive Director of the Sussex Beacon. And now it's the 30th anniversary of the Sussex Beacon, isn't it, Bill? This year.
That's right, Josh. Yeah, the foundation stone was laid on 31st of March 1992. As soon as, building after that was quite rapid, and the beacon was open to take patients soon after that.
Yeah. How did you get involved?
I originally came down to work for the beacon for 6 months in 2017, and just gradually got more and more interested in the organisation, loved the way that it works, thought it was very, very important. So I've stayed on, and it's become a really important part of my life.
Yeah, and it's changed so much, hasn't it, from the early days, and changed how the support and the different projects and things.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a hospice when it was first put together.
Yeah.
There would be 4, 5, even 10 people a week dying at the Beacon. Coming forward to now, things have changed to such an extent that we're all about living well with HIV. And the majority of the people who we work with are people who do have daily challenges around their HIV. And we work with them to see what we can do to help them deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. Great. So great. We've got a few people I'm going to ask about how it's helped them. And, I can add this about. So you've got the events, it's 30th anniversary coming up. What events have you got for the next
few months.
Well, that would be telling,
Josh. Oh. I can't prize anything out.
No, I mean, we're gonna have some, so a mixture of different things. So we want to do some events which are about celebrating where we are now, celebrating particularly the community's involvement in the way in which the Beacon has come forward over the years. And then later on in the year, perhaps towards World AIDS Day on the 1st of December, we'll be doing some events which are more about in memoriam. That's a tricky word.
Yeah, say that again.
In memoriam, that's the one.
And about
thinking back to the people who've passed there.
Yes, because it's very important to remember that, isn't it?
Yes.
So, the future. I mean, is there anything in the future that we can tell our listeners about?
Absolutely. I mean, our sort of principle, our principle way forward is to always be here for the people who need us. So we listen as far as we can to what people are telling us about our service. We adapt all the time to the different needs of people coming in.
Yeah.
We're continuing to develop. We want to try and spread the service a bit further across Sussex.
Great.
So as other services have closed down or have had their funding stopped across East and West Sussex, we want to try and see how much more we can do in the rest of the county.
Yeah.
Obviously still concentrating on being the only really accessible place, residential unit for people who need treatment for HIV in the south of England, and also about the services that we provide in the community.
Yeah, great. I just apologise for the noises. We're actually in the hotel lobby. So, but you have to do these things, don't you, Bill?
Yeah. We could have styled that out, but yeah, never mind. Yeah.
If anyone wants to get involved, how do they contact you?
So, through the website, sussexbeacon.org.uk. If you go there, you can just give us a ring. There's contact forms and so on. Or through our social media, if you look us up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're on all of the usual platforms.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Here's to the next 30 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill. Radio Reverb.
Okay, so we've got a bit of community news. What have you got, Stephen?
So I have two pieces of community news. The first one is the UK AIDS Memorial are having their second cabaret night. So this is to follow up from the one that they had a couple of months ago. And this one is going to be at Halfway to Heaven pub on the 19th of May. And that's in Duncannon Street. And that's just next to Charing Cross train station. And it's free entry. So it gives you the opportunity to be able to pop something into the donation box, you know, because it's a free night. So and then the second one is a campaign that you and I were both involved with, Sue, More to Me Than HIV, which is a photographic campaign that was done last year in Brighton. So that's coming to London for the whole whole month of June. It's going to be at the London Lighthouse Gallery. Which is just next, is just the English Ballet Building in Lyall Street, just in central London. So that's going to be on through the whole of June. So if you get a chance to go along and see that, then please do.
Would that be in connection with Pride Month, Stephen, or?
I don't know if it is, but obviously the fact that it's happening in June, Sue, would make me think that they've obviously got together and thought this would be a good time to have the exhibition done again. So,
right.
So you had some community news, didn't you, Tony?
There are a couple of bits. Firstly, the Eastbourne Lunch Positive is started up again. So it's the first Saturday every month. So it was the 7th of May, and the next one's going to be the 4th of June. So if you want to find out where it is and, put yourself down for it, go on lunchpositive.org. And it's got all the information there. And the second bit of news is that myself, being a wheelchair user, and my other half in the Worthing Hub, it's an organisation that we started to support people with HIV in West Sussex. Me and Dee are actually doing an abseil down Spinnaker Tower on Saturday 14th. As I said, I'm in a wheelchair. My lovely D is, I know she won't mind me saying, over 70.
Yeah.
And, so we'll put all the, we're on GoFundMe, we're on all, we had an interview on Latest TV.
Yeah.
Done last week, and we're going to be on BBC Radio Sussex on the 14th, the Saturday, the 14th of May, early morning, 7:40 in the morning. So I'll put all the GoFundMe and stuff and information and all the interviews on our Facebook page, which is the HIV.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Good luck with that. Good luck with that.
Thanks,
would you do that, Tanya? Would you do that?
I'm scared of heights.
Ah, so. that's Tanya excuse. Yeah.
I'm the same as you, Tanya. No, thank you.
It wasn't even my job to do, it wasn't even my idea to do it either. I was like, oh, we'll do another 10K. That 10K is easy in a wheelchair. I just got sore arms afterwards. And Dee was like, we need to raise the bar a little bit. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, we'll do an ab sale. I'm like, okay. So the deal is now on Saturday, I go out first.
Right. Oh. Can I ask you a really intricate question? And I hope you don't mind. Tony, now would you be doing it sitting in your chair, or will you come out of your chair?
Okay, so I'm a wheelchair user full time. You can actually do things like bungee jumps and abseiling in your wheelchair. My wheelchair is carbon fiber and titanium, so mm-hmm. it would be really light to do it in, but I don't fancy doing it in my chair. So
right. Okay.
At Spinnaker Tower or the Emirates Spinnaker Tower, they take you out of your chair, you transfer onto one of the aircraft wheelchairs, you know, to get you in.
Right, okay. They get
up, and then they'll put me and I'll transfer onto the floor, dangle my feet out, and then I'll just get myself out. Because one of my legs doesn't work and the other one's got about 40% in. That's why I use a wheelchair, because I had back when 8-9 years ago nearly. So yeah. So I'll just be dangling there like, I don't know, that little blueberry just hanging out.
I'm sure you won't, yeah. Like now, all the best of luck to you and Dee for that. And again, it's such for a super cause and a much needed cause. And I hope you have lots and lots of money. And let's be honest, who's at force for help and support of people living with HIV? And like you said, you know, that big word stigma, which were, you know, some of the things we've spoken to today about stigma is still here. It's still present. And we need to try and eliminate that, at least for future generations. And, you know, what we're doing now, we're helping towards that. And I truly believe that.
I think also people like us, or, you know, our listeners that maybe have been positive for a long time. I'm like 22 years, 23 years into it. So. Yeah. Like stigma then was like, oh God, you know, I remember the Don't Die of AIDS campaign and things like that. So Don't Die of Ignorance, campaign. And so, yeah, but I'm, it shocks me even to this day that stigma is still out there, but something that is undetectable, you're untransmittable. So I can't understand it, you know, but it's what people with HIV face every day.
Now a big hoo-ha for Sunday, and good luck to you and Dee.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you'll do absolutely super. So that's a wrap, guys, this week. I hope you have a good week, everybody. And they say we're going to have a heat wave. Are they fibbing? We'll have to wait and see with bated breath. I'm hoping so, because I've got a wee little balcony, which I've got my chair at already. I'm hoping there will be.
It'll be good.
okay guys.
Everybody, thanks everyone.
Take care. We'll see you next soon.
Bye.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.